Hello and welcome to the opening bell. We've been away for a few weeks. I was in Las Vegas for Cotto Canelo, which seems like a lifetime ago considering
so much has happened since.
What's happened since then. And then Tyson Fury went over to Germany and caused a bit of a stir by winning the world heavyweight title from the thought to be invincible Vladimir Klitschko. John, you were lucky enough to be in Dusseldorf when it was all happening. I was watching on telly. I felt that Fury was ahead. There was obviously always going to be the concern that he's in Germany, which is kind of Klitschko's adopted backyard, and that he wouldn't get the decision in a close fight. But I just suddenly started to get the feeling, bear in mind I'm watching at home, from about round 8 or 9 that he was going to win. At what point did you feel like the upset of the year was going to happen?
I thought it was a close fight. You know, all things being equal, you know, I thought Fury deserved to win. And, you know, but I had it a bit closer than the judges. And maybe, you know, Matt and I had a couple of rounds level because I thought they were close, but it was in Germany and should be going Klitschko's way. And I just didn't think he was going to get the decision. Like, I thought he deserved to get the decision. And had won enough rounds to win the fight. But I was just thinking, in Germany, Klitschko, you know, neither of them actually landed that much, but Klitschko had been sort of trundling forward a bit, and maybe that had been enough to get him some of the rounds. And I just thought it was either going to be a draw. I just thought the judges were either going to make it a draw or give it to Vlad. So So I didn't actually think he was going to get a decision until Michael Buffer said from the United Kingdom. And even then, I didn't know what was going on. I basically just didn't know what was going on. Because I was watching it, and I just couldn't believe what Fury was doing. He was outboxing and outfoxing him round after round and not getting hurt in the process.
There was a brief recovery from Klitschko in the final round, which triggered some chance of his surname from the crowd. What was the reaction largely from the crowd when Fury was declared the winner?
The German fans were stunned into silence, and obviously just roars and cheers from all of Tyson's supporters. So there were some elements of bedlam, like near ringside, and when Tyson started singing that Aerosmith song, there was this another stunned silence. No one knew what to think. And then all the Brits joined in and started singing with him. It was just, I still can't believe it all happened.
No, I think you and I have said that several times during the course of the week. We sit close to each other in the office, and while I was checking pages and looking at this week's front cover, which has got an image of Fury grabbing all the belts, that I just couldn't. Still was in a state of disbelief that Tyson Fury had beaten Vladimir Klitschko. Do you think that, how much of it came down to what Tyson Fury was doing in the ring, what he was doing well? I thought it wasn't a thrilling performance, but I thought it was a brilliant performance. I thought he did exactly what was required. And he did what, let's not forget, nearly 20 previous challenges had tried to do and failed miserably.
I think it's like 90, he's like Klitschko's won 90 consecutive world titles.
And he'd won a few before that as well, hadn't he?
That's
an earlier
his
reigns.
Recent run.
So, was it down to what Fury was doing? Was it down to the fact that Klitschko had an off night? Was it down to the fact that Klitschko, at the age of 39, did get old overnight?
No, I think it was mainly what Fury was doing. I think that's just a very tricky style for Klitschko, that Fury's taller than him and actually controlled the distance better and decided to, outpoint him in Germany, decided to outbox him, decided to box and move. So I think that's a very different style to Klitschko. So Klitschko didn't adapt to it well at all. But there is the element that Vladimir Klitschko is 39 years old. I think I said on this podcast before that he was poor against Brian Jennings, great against Pulev before that, but Brian Jennings was a poor performance, and I thought then that was the first signs of aging. I wasn't expecting such a dramatic decline, but that decline was helped along by what Tyson Fury was doing.
Do you think that, you know, faced with probably, if we're honest, what Klitschko might have deemed to be a bit of a clown in front of him during the pre-fight build-up, during the press conferences where Fury would turn up dressed as Batman while he was nutting his way through melons, and generally just making a bit of a nuisance of himself. Although Klitschko will undoubtedly have put his body through hell to train for the fight, do you think, mentally at least, he underestimated Tyson Fury?
Maybe, because I always thought, I was thinking before the fight that maybe he had taken Brian Jennings lightly and would take Fury seriously. And at no stage in the build-up did Klitschko seem rattled or troubled. Even, you know, he seemed perfectly composed at the weigh-in. But as soon as the first bell went, it just looked like he didn't know what he was up against. Had they done their homework thoroughly, or was Fury just doing things they weren't expecting him to do and they didn't know how to cope with it? Actually, probably not, because they were probably expecting him to move, and that's why there was that whole scandal over the ring canvas, because they put in, before the fight, they put in two layers of sort of spongy foam like beneath the canvas, clearly to try and slow Fury down so he couldn't get away from Klitschko and his big right hand. Luckily, Fury's team sort of spotted it and insisted that it be removed. But I really wasn't expecting him just to seem so out of sorts all the way through. I thought it would be the opposite way around. I thought Fury would be real relaxed and joking about all in the build-up, and then once he got into the fight, the reality of being in the ring with Vladimir Klitschko would catch up with him, and we'd see what we're sort of so used to seeing from Klitschko. I was very surprised by how quickly Klitschko kind of ran out of ideas.
Yeah, I think I was, and it's
with his experience, that's just not what you'd expect. Maybe he hadn't any boxed anyone quite like Fury before. Maybe it's hard to find someone as big and as mobile as Fury, even though he doesn't look like the smoothest mover. It was actually very difficult for Klitschko to catch up with him. But then there should have been more urgency from Klitschko from the start. He was way too reticent, if that word applies, too hesitant to let his hands go. And he really had to sort of let combinations go just to try and get inside, because he was waiting. And I thought Fury was feinting really well and keeping him sort of off balance and offset. But Klitschko just really needed to power through that. You didn't really see him attacking the body much, did you?
No.
It was like he was looking for one big right hand, and that he never found. Yeah, he touched him with it a couple of times, but never found him with maybe the big shot he'd been banking on. But that's pretty crazy to just bank on one knockout punch.
It was curious that he didn't seem to have any answer to it. He didn't seem to have a plan B at all. And it was almost as if he's never really been called on, or he's never had to call on a plan B at any point in his career. With the exception, perhaps, of the Ross Purity fight, which was his first loss, which you can really, really just put down to exhaustion. But after that, he was knocked out by Corey Sanders. He was stopped by Lamon Brewster. At no point was he really given an opportunity to change what he was doing. More or less every fight since, he's had it his own way. So perhaps he's never really been put in that situation in the ring where he felt like he couldn't win.
And maybe he never expected someone to stay away from him the way Fury did. Maybe he always thought they would feel they had to come to him, because if they stayed off, then they'd just be giving rounds away to the champion.
You gave the fight 4 stars. You enjoyed it. I enjoyed it from home. However, it has received, let's be honest, mixed reviews. My girlfriend, who will watch fights like this, for example, she was enthralled during Frotch Groves 2. more or less walked out of the lounge in a huff in round three of Klitschko Fury. You and I have had, probably heated is too strong a word, but we've had discussions with people that work in our office, not the boxing news team, I hasten to add, but people that work in the NewsQuest office that thought the fight was dreadful and not a great advertisement for boxing. So it does seem that although the purist and hardcore fan was extremely impressed by Tyson Fury's efforts on Saturday night, some of the more casuals sporting fans who perhaps, without wishing to insult their intelligence or education, don't really know what they're looking for in a boxing match, we're not so impressed. Is that fair, do you think? And do you stand by your four stars?
Yeah, let's all be glad I didn't give it five stars. No, I mean, I found the fight completely compelling because I did think it was close. And yeah, there weren't a lot of big shots, and there were very few shots landed. But I found it gripping all the way through, and also the Fury's tactics were a big surprise to me. Klitschko's reaction to them were a big surprise to me. So yeah, I found it fascinating. So that's why I gave it four stars. You know, maybe if you want two big dudes to stand there and punch each other's heads in, we didn't get that. But I was really, really impressed by the intelligence on display. And I also wanted to include the whole, you know, just an amazing experience seeing Fury as crazy at the end as he was at the beginning. And yeah, but maybe that works as a live event rather than off TV. But hopefully with the report, I was, you know, with the article in the magazine, I was trying to write what I was feeling, what I was seeing, and what it was like being there. So that's why I gave it four stars. But I would caution, star ratings aren't the best way of appreciating a fight.
No,
probably better off reading the report.
Yeah, no, true. But I mean, I must admit, I was, I think, as enthralled as one can be when you're watching on television. I found it all absolutely fascinating for many of the reasons that you stated there. And as I mentioned right at the start of the podcast, from about round eight or nine, I just had a feeling come over me that something monumental was brewing.
Yeah.
And I found the whole thing completely, completely fascinating.
Yeah, and I always had to factor in the achievement. You know, he's gone over to the, you know, Klitschko was the number one in the division, but by far the number one in the division. He'd been dominant for the last, you know, however many years. Like, he'd looked pretty, you know, since like 2010, it's looked like no one out there could beat him. So he's got to his dominant champion in his home country, or adopted home country, so on home turf. And that Fury's gone over there and done a number on him, and it's for the heavyweight title, heavyweight championship of the world.
Yeah, exactly. I think what Tyson Fury's achieved is nothing short of phenomenal. There was some, which I address in the column this week, some kind of rather negative, disappointing press about his performance and about him as a man. What's your view on Tyson Fury as a human being, John? Bear in mind, we can't be in here for hours now.
Yeah, no, he is complicated, and he does say things that are offensive, that I don't agree with, that are unwise to say so publicly. But I don't, you know, but then I've got a lot of admiration for not only what he's achieved as a sportsman, but just for his devil-may-care attitude to saying whatever is in his brain at any given time. So I don't find him, you know, yeah, if you judge him on what he says, you can be offended. Well, you probably should be offended. But also, he's someone who manages to contradict himself any given mood. He can say two opposite things in the same sentence and probably believes them both at the same time. So he, and also I think people should be judged on what they do, you know, rather than just, we've got free speech and he says crazy things, but is he a bad person? Well, I don't think so. There have been heavyweight champions of the world who have done a lot worse things than Tyson Fury.
No, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I think that all of us in the office have had, you know, a fair amount to do with Tyson over the years, even if it's just kind of observing his at times in crazy behaviour at press conferences. But I mean, from my own personal point of view, the times that I've spoke to Tyson and the times that I've witnessed him fight and I've seen him interviewed and I've seen him at press conferences, never once have I come away from that thinking he was a nasty person, that he was a wrong and that he was anything more than something of a natural, albeit erratic, showman.
Yeah.
And I certainly think his win is, or could potentially be, a breath of fresh air in the sport. Through no fault of his own, Vladimir Klitschko was not really appreciated in a way that, and as a consequence of that, the heavyweight division was ignored. I think with Tyson Fury ahead of the heavyweight division, it's certainly not gonna, it's not gonna be subject to any ignorance.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated now to see what happens. We're 99% certain that the Klitschko rematch will happen. Let's talk about that before we move on to some other developments that have happened since the fight. Let's talk about the Klitschko rematch. Now, although, as you said, it was a close fight and the scorecards didn't come back with a landslide, Klitschko was kind of in the fight. It was always a threat, you felt. But to me, I just can't see how he wins the rematch.
No.
To me, I've almost written him off in that rematch already. What about you?
Yeah, it just seemed Fury was all wrong for him, and how is he going to solve that puzzle? He's got to change. He's got to change everything, you know, his approach, his tactics, and doing that, you know, he'll be 40. I mean, you know, if their rematch is in April or May, he'll be 40 by then. I don't see how he could change. If Klitschko won the rematch, that would be an amazing feat. You know, he's still got, you know, he's going in there basically with a puncher's chance. Like, he'll still be able to hit hard. He's just got to catch up with Fury. You know, what if Fury's even better?
Yeah, I mean, my instinct now is that I'd think that Fury could possibly stop him next time. And it may not be a case of he knocks him out or, you know, he's defenceless and rescued by the referee. It may just be a case of the corner after 10 rounds go, you're not going to beat this guy. Let's just call it quits here, and kind of, it almost as a sympathy vote, they kind of drag Klitschko out.
I've got, you know, as you know, I've got a huge admiration for Klitschko.
Likewise,
how he conducts himself, and you know, and everything. He is the sort of, he's been the model of what, you know, what a champion should be. But times change, and Tyson Fury's taken over.
How should we judge Vladimir Klitschko? Let's say he doesn't win the rematch, and let's say he retires, just for argument's sake. To me, that shouldn't affect his place in history. To me, he's still up there as an all-time great.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue with that. Although, I was supposed to play devil's advocate, what's the counter-argument? Oh, he's boring. Oh, it was a weak time for division. But you just got to look at his sort of statistics for the number of defences, years he's reigned as a champion. And then, you know, we do love to, even though you can't compare different eras, we love to compare different eras. Be very, yeah, for all the great heavyweights from the golden age of boxing, actually Klitschko is sort of part of that new generation of supermen, as in people who are just so big and use their size so well. That he would be, you know, he would be very tough for anyone, you know, any sort of historic figure to beat, you know. But I don't know how much weight you can attach to that. But for what he's achieved in his era, he dominated the heavyweight division.
Exactly.
For a decade.
I agree with you for what it's worth, John. I agree with you. Okay, so the IBF have made a move this week, and they are. It looks if basically. Bottom line, if Fury fights Klitschko in a rematch, he'll lose his IBF title.
Yeah.
It's not an ideal scenario. I said to you yesterday that even though, you know, the whole world will still regard Tyson Fury as the champion, as the world champion, the fact that there will be another title holder out there kind of blots the landscape a little bit, doesn't it? And
yeah.
It just comes back to being a little bit confusing and a little harder to follow. What's your take on the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it's a real shame. You know, it's, you know, you'd like to see it where you have one champion who's unified all the belts. So if Fury has three and is the top man in division, you'd like to see that build towards a fight with Deontay Wilder for all the belts. And it's just a shame to have one of them taken off him outside the ring through no fault of his own. And you know, with all the detractors Tyson Fury's got, it just gives, you know, it will give the sort of the haters to, you know, more ammunition to throw at him, to try and accuse him of not being a proper champion when he is the heavyweight champion of the world. And you know, sanctioning bodies, it's not like they, you know, they're very rarely that keen to follow their own rules all the time. So why rush having to make the IBF mandatory defence? Why not, you know, make Glasgow mandatory for the winner of the Klitschko Fury rematch? It's not like, you know, you make a lot of money out of that.
Common sense doesn't always prevail with the sanctioning bodies, does it? And it does seem that common sense is screaming very, very loudly for that scenario that you've just put out there.
And Fury would fight him. Like Peter Fury is saying the day after the fight that he wants to fight anyone who's in the top 10, he wants to fight them. He wouldn't be afraid of fighting Glaskov. He's happy to fight the best guys out there. So it's just, I don't like it, mate.
No, I don't like it at all. It's a real, it's a real shame. It really is. I can understand. I mean, the IBF's point of view, although they're kind of deer into their own rules, in effect, you would think that they would want to be attached to an event like Fury Klitschko 2,
yeah.
And they would just go, okay, let's just leave it a few months before we enforce this kind of mandatory upon a new champion.
Is it like Glaskov, Charles Martin, to be the third best heavyweight in the world?
It's a shame.
Come on.
It's a real shame, but it also shows you the difficult situation we've got in boxing at the moment, in that we all, well, I'm sure that in the top five most common wishes among boxing fans would be that there was just one world champion, one recognised world champion per division.
Yeah.
And it shows you, number one, how very, very difficult it is in this day and age to hold on to even probably more than one belt.
Yeah, and what an amazing job Klitschko did.
And that was what I was going to say was my point too. Was point two was that Klitschko's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think with things like this going on, as much as they may say publicly, the governing bodies, that they're up for unification and this, that and the other, that they make it very, very, very difficult for that to happen.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult for that to happen. And, you know, you wonder, I mean, how much long do we give them credibility, these belts? I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? It's a really, really difficult one. But you come to a point where you think you don't even want to mention them.
Yeah.
You don't even want to mention these sanctioning bodies.
All right, let's just have the Boxing News champion of the world.
Well, we say that, and we may not want to mention the Ring magazine. They tried something like that a few years ago with, you know, fair play to them for doing that. But they did something like that, and it was, would you deem it a success? And how?
Yeah, but they're owned by a promoter. We're independent and
exactly.
Super cool.
Exactly.
as the
world boxing news champion,
the WBN champion of the world.
WBN, it's kind of.
What, you're saying that's too late?
I don't know. I'm saying it's more confusing letters that we don't need.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is to it. I don't know what the solution is to it, but it seems clear to me that the different bodies are not that willing to work with each other here. It really does.
On the bright side, at least most divisions have a sort of clear who's the best at the moment, or is that just me being mad? As in, you know.
Yeah.
Is there that much dispute at who's the number one in each division?
Maybe
at lightweight.
Maybe there is. I think it's all down to
middleweight to an extent.
How are we gonna afford to make all these belts?
First, we need to find the Boxing News Cup.
Oh, from
I just
the
saw
60s.
In the magazine, yeah, it was in the 50s or 60s, and what? It was a sort of, what, a gold cup.
Fury would have won that. Actually,
exactly. So the Boxing News Cup was an incentive, so it was an expensive trophy that was worth, what, £50,000 or something? I can't remember. Well, I saw in like the original magazine from the 50s, and it was like an incentive for a British heavyweight to win the world title, and so the next British heavyweight to win it would get the Boxing News Cup. So, and it's vanished somewhere in the mists of history, but we need to find this cup and give it to Tyson Fury.
Unless it was awarded to, an unbeknownst to us, it was awarded to Lennox Lewis.
So what you're saying is we need to break into Lennox Lewis's house to find the Boxing News Cup and give it to Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
I'll be right behind you.
And then what? And then what? But then what are we going to do? We're going to melt it down to make belts.
Oh yeah. Okay. We'll sell it to Tyson Fury and use the profits to make the belts.
It's all. I mean, you can undergame. I mean,
no, we'll get sponsored to make the belts by. You know, who's got money at the moment? Milk.
Right. Okay.
Big business, milk, mate.
You can't blame, or can you? Do you think that Glazkov's to blame, or his team are to blame, in that they're not saying, okay, we'll just step aside? They're actually enforcing it, and they're saying, well, why should we step aside?
Yeah, they're very clear. They want to go for the title. I think a little portion of blame could probably go to them. I don't know if how much weight it would have with the IBF if Glazkov was saying, look, I want to fight the winner for all the belts. Or maybe get paid some step aside money and wait to fight the winner for all the belts. Because how meaningful would be a victory over Charles Martin for the vacant IBF heavyweight strap? But then maybe if he wins it, he's got more bargaining power when it comes to fighting one of the champions. But yeah, it's hard, you know, I suppose it's hard to be noble when money's at stake.
It is hard to be noble when money's at stake. It's very well put.
Or maybe they'd be worried that they'd just be waiting around for a year or something.
Yeah.
You know, because what if Klitschko won and there was another? You know, there was a trilogy.
It's true, and
And we can console ourselves with Fury Klitschko too. It's gonna be a massive event.
It is.
Still interesting. Interesting to see if Klitschko can be any better.
Do we want... I mean, there is some really interesting fights out there for Tyson Fury. Klitschko 2, the first one wasn't a classic, but the second one I'm just fascinated by for reasons we've mentioned. Deontay Wilder, WBC champion. Anthony Joshua, obviously, or even Dillian White, if that... Yeah. And, of course, David Haye is coming back. There's a lot going on at heavyweight at the moment where it could suddenly be the most exciting division in the sport.
Yeah, and British heavyweight boxing, it's going to be huge. Like, you know, Joshua, Dillian White is going to get a lot of attention. You know, any British guy to fight Fury down the line, that would be huge. Haye coming back is sort of interesting. Though he's got a lot to prove now after pulling out of two fights with Fury. Fury now is kind of a tough sell unless he really starts tearing up trees on the way to get there. He's really got to fight his way to get that shot.
I'd be surprised if we see anything like vintage Haye over the next few years. His explosive style was, you know, is perhaps not suited to a 35-year-old body that, let's face it, has probably not been training that hard over the last few years, and quite rightly so.
But if Shane McGuigan can work some magic with him,
yeah,
that would be a huge achievement for Shane McGuigan as a young trainer.
Of course it would. But it's interesting to see where David Haye goes with his comeback and how much he really, really wants it deep down.
You know, the young British heavyweights like Joshua, like White coming up, if they get in the mix with Haye, that's quite interesting. What if David Price comes back?
Yeah, I know. Well, David Price, yeah. It is, I think it's wonderful. It's It's what I've been waiting for. It's what I've been waiting for since Michael Mora knocked out Bert Cooper many years ago in what was a great fight. But I mean, we keep saying, well, this might happen. We still are waiting. Let's be honest here, and let's keep our feet on the ground here. We are still waiting for this great fight to happen. But hopefully one is around the corner. It's all been Tyson Fury. There was, of course, James DeGale in action at the weekend. He was over in Canada, and he took on former IBF super middleweight champion Lucien Boutte. And he was impressive, I thought, but not as impressive as I expected. But it's been... He's not doing things the easy way, is he, at the moment, James DeGale, in that he's fighting away from home, he's fighting some top guys, and just when it looks like he's in control of these fights, it's almost like he just switches off. I mean, is this something that he can eradicate, do you think?
I think so. Maybe it's sort of a question of concentration and psychological side rather than conditioning, but that can be, you know, that's something to work on. But it does make his fight sort of nail-biting. Like the Durrell fight when he won the title, it seemed like he was just cruising to a lead, and then he took his eye off the ball and suddenly it became close again. And it's hard, yeah, he should probably, for it to be a good result, maybe he probably should have stopped him in Canada. But, you know, a good fight against a former champion, you know, it's hard to complain too much.
Does this make Karl Froch look a little better?
Yeah. Makes the Karl Froch performance look good. And Boutte's done really well to come back, because he looked pretty shaky for a few fights after Froch.
He said himself that it took him a while to get over the shellacking he took against Karl Froch. And also, he was never quite right, light heavyweight. I think he's done the right thing to come back down to 168 pounds. Okay, he's 35, but he's a top 10 guy again, isn't he, at super middleweight? Yeah. What do we like to see James DeGale do next in an ideal world, without promotional conflicts, without sanctioning body wars? What would we like to see happen to James DeGale next time out?
I suppose start trying to unify the division. And yeah, he said he wants Badu Jack in America. You know, I'd like to see him fight. Well, I'd like to see him fight in Britain. Arthur Abraham's quite well known, and I don't particularly like Abraham's style. And I think Gale will probably beat him well, and that would probably be quite a high-profile fight to Gale Abraham as a world title unification
in Germany.
Maybe.
Oh, he wouldn't come over here, would he?
Probably not. This is easier for Brits to get to Germany than it is to get to Las Vegas.
Okay, coming towards the end of this week's podcast, but looking ahead to the weekend, I think it's a really interesting fight, actually. I've penned the preview for the magazine this week. Daniel Jacobs, Peter Quillen, for the watered-down WBA regular title. I found it really hard to pick a winner here. What's your take on this fight, and do you think it'll be a good one? Because it's on Box Nation, isn't it, this weekend?
Yeah. I don't know, will the two of them gel? I don't love the way Peter Quillen fights. You know, he's big and quite strong. Is he that amazing? Shoot, why did he avoid Korobov? Danny Jacobs is good. He's technically skilled and hits quite hard as well. But he hasn't set the world on fire for me, and I don't know if the two styles will gel. But Jacobs probably has the edge in skill, which would tempt me to pick him to win.
Cool, an edge in power.
Yeah.
And durability, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, does he struggle to make the weight?
He was 161 and a quarter pounds or something for the Andy Lee fight.
Yeah.
Which effectively made that a non-title fight, if the title was only on the line for Andy Lee. But he has made 160 since, and you would think that he would do it for a fight of this magnitude, particularly they're both Hale. Well, they're both live in Brooklyn, so it's imagine it'll be massive over there.
It's a big fight in New York, but it's just, yeah, I think we all know who the proper middleweight champions are. Like Andy Lee's got the WBO, there's Golovkin, there's Canelo now. So it's just, I'm just not on board with the WBA regular title. I think it's a bit silly.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
You make it like, you know, King of New York, the championship of New York, that'll be fine. It's still a good fight. Local bragging rights.
Before we do leave, someone who I've who often has missed out on the limelight is Lenny Dawes. He's in action this weekend. I think he's on Channel 5. Ruben Nieto, he fights for the European title. Lenny Dawes, I have admired for a long time. I like the way he boxes. Very stylish, very clever. It seems like he's been around forever and ever. 36 years old now, he gets this chance.
You're not too old at 36, mate.
You're definitely not. I was at my peak at 36. But
it's a bit of precipitous decline.
do you give Lenny a chance against the Spaniard?
I do. I don't know if it's just like I feel he's... It's his time, you know, he's been unlucky, a long wait, but I don't know, maybe the stars were aligning for this to work, or maybe it is just a bridge too far, but maybe I like the story too much that I think Lenny Dawes can do it.
I really hope Lenny Dawes can do it.
But this is a Mick Hennessy promoted show, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Hennessy's gone from, you know, guiding Fury all the way to the world title in Dusseldorf. Now the weekend after, he's back in Carl Shorten.
Hopefully guiding Lenny Dawes to the pinnacle of his continent. Okay, we'll call it a day with that. Everything you need, though, is in this week's issue, and it is absolutely packed. I didn't mention, we've got exclusive guest column in there from Tyson Fury, which is typically enthralling. There's John's excellent fight report from Dusseldorf, and there's some striking imagery of the fight. Again, we were ringside in Canada for De Gale Boutte, and there's a lot of stuff in there. We also speak to Anthony Crolla extensively about his world title win, what it means to him, some really good stuff and insight in there. We speak as well to Leon McKenzie about his switch from football to the brink of a British title shot in boxing. Of course, there's that Danny Jacobs, Peter Quillen preview, Lenny Dawes preview, great amateur section.
It is a great amateur section.
We look back on 1980 in flashback. Yet another fantastic Yesterday's Heroes piece from Alex Daly. The readers seem to be getting on board with that. I really enjoy reading Alex's pieces every week. And there's the always trusty 60 Seconds interview with Julius Jackson. So,
and a great contents page.
Just, I mean,
not sure,
you know,
about the inside front, but
get involved with this week's boxing news. It's got a really good front cover, to be honest, with Fury. It's got a bit of a souvenir feel about it, something that you'd want to keep. So get yourself down the news agents and grab a copy. We'll be back next week, where we'll be talking about Anthony Joshua and Dillian. Well, I keep saying Dillian. It's Dillon, isn't it?
It's spelled Dillian.
Yeah, but whenever they announce him, they say Dillon, don't they?
Maybe I should ask him. I don't know if he's angry
with me. I keep saying Dillian White if you spell it that way. But anyway, so next week we'll be looking at that fight.
We only haven't podcasted for the last couple of weeks because we've been in different countries.
We've been all over the place.
We've been divided by oceans, Matt.
Didn't even have time to tell my amusing Las Vegas story, but
no,
we'll save that one. I've got to go and meet Darky Smith.
Right. We're going to have to wait another week for your amusing Las Vegas story.
We'll see you all next week.
Good to finish on a cliffhanger.